Good morning. My name is Terry Williams, and I was a scholar from 2009 and 2011 at the Michigan site. So I just want to get right in. This has been a partnership with the Center for Urban Families, and I'll be presenting with my key contact at the organization, Chris Martin. So I'll just go through the first couple of slides and let him take the reins. We have no disclosures. I always, for a long time, I would thank folks at the end, but over time, I realized they're involved at the beginning. They should be thanked at the beginning. So I just wanted to thank our funders, the Urban Health Institute, who gave us the grant to do this project, the Center for Adolescent Health, who paid for my time, of course, the Center for Urban Families, who allowed us to, you know, work with them and come into their space, and our collaborative research team, the rest of who couldn't be here today. So, yeah, and, of course, our participants. And so here's kind of how where we want to go today. We'll talk a bit about Baltimore and some social determinants of health and how we see this fitting in, say a little bit more about the organization and the program we work with, and then just kind of go through the design methods and results of the current project.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So just to give you a little context and paint a picture of the landscape of Baltimore City, Baltimore City is the largest city in the state of Maryland. It's got just under 621,000 residents. Of those residents, about 22% of Baltimore's population currently live below the poverty line versus 9% for the rest of the state of Maryland. As compared to the national averages, Baltimore City has a higher percentage of children living below the poverty line, as well as higher rates of teenage pregnancy, teenage births, juvenile arrests. Almost two-thirds of Baltimore City high school students reported having consumed alcohol, and more than 40% have admitted to smoking marijuana and trying cigarettes. Baltimore has also been one of the nation's highest murder rates over the last 20 years. Currently ranked, or in 2012, was ranked 6th per capita. This murder rate is about 3 times higher than that of Washington, D.C., and nearly 10 times that of New York City. The Baltimore-Towson Metro Statistical Area was ranked the 5th highest in HIV diagnoses in 2010, 4th in chlamydia, and the 2nd highest gonorrhea rates among cities in the United States. Was that? Yeah, lots going on. So we know that that modifiable social factors are important in explaining health outcomes and differences. So while there are many, there are 3 that were particularly relevant to this particular project. When looking at education, we've found previous research has shown that less education is linked with worse health. Across all racial and ethnic groups, adults with greater education attainment are less likely to rate their health as less than very good. Also, babies that are born to mothers who have not completed high school are nearly twice as likely to die before their first birthday than those who have a college, or born to parents with college degrees. Also, children whose parents who have not finished high school are more than 6 times as likely to be in poor or fair health as compared to those of college graduates. What's really interesting is that in Baltimore City, there's about a 30-year difference in life expectancy, average life expectancy. So some of the poorest neighborhoods in Baltimore City, the average life expectancy is about 56.7 years, less than 1 mile away in one of the more affluent and well-to-do neighborhoods, it's roughly 86.3 years. Much of these underserved populations exist in food deserts, and from some of the folks with whom I've worked, they said they won't even allow their children to go outside and play due to the danger on the streets. So it's also very significant. So a little bit about the organization. Center for Urban Families was started in 1999 with under the fatherhood umbrella, really wanted to focus on fatherhood engagement. And then part of that, they realized we needed to help fathers become connected to the workforce. So the model that we've developed is called the Family Stability and Economic Success Model, and it's an integrated and comprehensive approach to address the needs of low-income fathers and families. So the services offered through the FSES model target 2 critical areas, which are chronic unemployment and family instability. So our programs really take a hands-on approach to training and support to promote responsible parenting and healthy relationships, family-sustaining employment and career advancement, healthy management of personal behaviors, attitudes, and aspirations, financial literacy and education, and then also just giving them ready access to the information and resources needed to, you know, sustain long-term progress, work towards self-sufficiency. So this particular program, the Strive Baltimore program, is a four-week intensive soft skills attitudinal training. A lot of programs will offer the hard skills, the certifications, which we will do on the back end, but really we want to focus on helping our participants understand who they are and how they fit into the, you know, the world around them. Each cohort usually begins with about 80 to 100 participants, and after the 4 weeks, we usually graduate about 50%. So anywhere from 35 to about 50 participants will actually graduate. It's a very rigorous course, Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and very high expectations. So many of our clients have a criminal history, and working with our account managers and employer development team, we really try to target the employers who are a bit more lenient and accepting of criminal backgrounds. Baltimore at one point was a big manufacturing town, and over the last several decades it's become more focused on big healthcare presence and then also leisure and hospitality, so a lot of service-oriented jobs. So following a participant's graduation, after the 4 weeks, we will then get them into the workforce development department, where we will work with account managers, career advisors, and retention specialists to try to link them up with career opportunities that make sense, and provide some of these hard skill training, so the certifications, whether it be ServSafe to help someone work in a kitchen, or CNA, GNA to help someone find their way into the hospital setting. And then we also will do two-year retention. We work with job replacement, case management, trying to help folks stay connected, focused, and some, for the employers who are really willing to build that and develop that partnership, we try to act as an extension of their human resources department and try to ward off some of these bad behaviors when they first are seen, so we can try to provide the coaching necessary for them to stay employed and continue to climb, you know, the career laddering, or so to speak. So this current study, there are two main research questions that we're really interested in. What impact does the Strive program have on its young adult clients and their families? And in what ways can job training programs address social determinants of health among young adults in low-resource settings?
So this project originated from one of our CAB members who works at the Center for Urban Families. He came and he said, you know, we have this program, Strive, it's great, and what we really collect is whether or not they get a job. It's a job training program, makes sense. But we think a lot more is happening. So can we work together and think of a way to better understand the larger impact that this program might be having on its family? So while Strive serves a range of ages, so what, 18 to 60?
My oldest has been 73.
73, 18 to 73. We focused on the young adult clients for a couple of reasons. First of all, the probability of entering into poverty is highest among young adults. And also the center that I work for at Hopkins is the Center for Adolescent Health, so it made sense for us to focus on young adults. And then finally, we recognize that, you know, while everybody has like opportunities in life, if we focus on the young adults and try to figure out what was going on there, we'd be able to, that may be the biggest impact that we can understand and like help them influence. So we wanted to gain multiple perspectives because, as you know, folks love themselves and we talk sometimes very favorably about ourselves. So in addition to interviewing graduates of Strive, we also asked them to nominate three significant others who knew them both before and after their participation in Strive. And we, you know, like we called them, some said yes, some declined, so we'll just go through how that looked. It turned out that only 12 people who were nominated say yes, will be interviewed on behalf of our Strive, on behalf of the graduate. And just to be clear, they were interviewed, the significant others could have been anybody, boyfriends, moms, cousins, anybody who knew them well and would kind of vouch for them. And they were, the significant others were interviewed about the Strive graduate, not about themselves. So here's what we ended up with. A total of 32 interviews were conducted, mostly women. Most of the folks said that they were either single or in a married or committed relationship. Nearly all the participants said they'd completed high school or had a GED. Over half weren't working at the time, but I have a little asterisk there because that includes two significant others who were not working because of disability. And over a third reported an incarceration history, which Chris talked a little bit about. So we had two semi-structured interview protocols, one for the graduates, one for significant others. And we also had them fill out a demographic questionnaire, which is how we got that data I just told you about. And we recruited recent graduates because, in working and talking to Strive about the whole project, we're like, well, we want folks that just graduated, but we also know how long it takes to get a job if you don't have some of the barriers that some of the Strive graduates have. So we recruited from a whole year folks. So we thought that we'd get a good range of people who had actually had experience either on the job market and folks who are fresh out of the program. So the data was collected between December 2012 and May of this year. And the interviews we wanted to make sure that they were convenient. A lot of the interviews were held at the Center for Urban Families, but we also went to folks' homes if that made more sense for them. And everybody was given a $20 gift card at the end of the interview. So the Strive graduate interviews, they lasted from 33 minutes to 140 minutes, while the duration of the significant other interviews were much shorter, so from about 12 minutes to 47 minutes. And that's usually due to the fact that, one, a lot of the people who were nominated hadn't known the Strive graduate when they were kids, so we asked them to give us their story from the time that they knew the graduate up until the current time. So everybody was given a unique identifier, so to ensure confidentiality, and it was of course approved by the IRB. That's a big deal, and we'll talk about that in a second. But, digital recordings, transcribed verbatim, if any of you do qualitative work, this is consistent. The one thing that I did want to point out on this slide is the consistency coding. I know a lot of folks do different things for reliability. What we do is we have two coders code all the interviews individually, independently, and then we come together and agree on all the codes. So this idea of there's a consensus, it's not just groupthink or whatnot. It's we want to think of how the other person's thinking, but we want to make sure that we're accurately understanding what's going on in the interviews. And then we just use SPSS for the descriptors. So what'd they say, right? So everybody who, we asked them, three major themes emerge, and what's funny is that everybody, when asked what they expected to get from the program, they're like, we wanted a job. We expected to get a job. Job training program equals job. That being said, even though, like I said earlier, half of the participants weren't even working at the time of the interview, all of them said they got a lot more out of it. Even if it wasn't at the end of the program, it was a job. They got a ton out of it. And so we just kind of want to go through some of the things that we that they said. Oh, yeah, and that's definitely Obama, because the Center for Urban Families is that cool in Baltimore. He went and visited. So the first theme, it kind of focuses on this idea of moving on, both mentally, emotionally, and sometimes even physically from one place to another. We know that stress and trauma contribute to poor health, and Strive both provided a safe space for young people to confront their past hurts and kind of a roadmap for them to move past it. So I just kind of go through some of the first sets of quotes. So, in Stand and Deliver, which is a part of the program, in the first week, I spoke about my mom's passing. That struck the chord. Everybody in the room that day was crying. I guess it allowed me to open up and let out my feelings, because I'm not really open. I can say that helped me get out some of my emotions. And this was a young woman who gave this quote. And then in the second quote, another young woman, she said, I had a lot of burdens on my shoulders, and I had to let go for real. I had too much pride before I got here, and I really had to let go of stuff let a lot of stuff go in order to complete this process, and I felt as though I did. So this idea that people have hurts and hang-ups that affect their lives, whether they're going into the job place and how they interact with people, or the stereotypes that they give based on just some of the personal experiences they've had, and this program helps them put that in context, say, these things happen to you or happen with you, but they don't have to continue to negatively affect the way that you interact with people moving forward. And then that kind of put them on a, you know, just kind of thinking about that, like, oh, wait a minute, I don't have to keep holding on to this. I can move on. Put them in help them prepare for a better future, because they realize, you know, you can work for what you want. You can decide how you begin doesn't have to be how you end. And I think sometimes, and even talking to Chris about this data, I think sometimes we take for granted some of the lessons we've learned this just along the way as we've grown up from important individuals. Like, hey, you could totally change directions. But for a lot of the young people that we interviewed, that necessarily wasn't the case. They hadn't heard those messages that you can switch trajectories. Like, yes, something bad happens, but you can keep going. And the second major theme was about communication. And this is really important in relation to what Chris said just about Baltimore. You know, a lot of the young people we talk to, fighting. That's how you resolve conflicts. Somebody say something bad about your mom, you fight. Somebody say something you don't like, you fight. And some participants even talked about, like, cursing out their bosses. And remember, this is 18 to 24-year-olds. So I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, like, I see why you're not at that job anymore. But it's interesting because the way that they talked about Strive, like, the communications, the second theme, this idea that effective communication involves being open to criticism and also being willing to, like, actively listen to what the other person's saying. Because sometimes it's like, wait, there's not something bad about me. I'm mad about it. But it could be that there's something that you personally can change. And so, and they spoke about it both in dealing with supervisors. So the first girl, it's funny, she said, you know, say if you have one of them crappy bosses, give you attitude and don't know, give you attitude and you don't know how to take it, because again, normally you'd fight about it, but you're on your job, so you don't want to do that. You'll need constructive criticism because they'll know how to control you and how to respond to the certain situation. So this idea that, like, they're learning and strive, like, there is, it's really a dance that sometimes we have to do with our employer. I'm sure if we all know that. You know, it's like, okay, I hear you. I may or may not agree with you, but I know that to move forward, we have to figure it out. But what's most important, is, and we hope that these things happen, is that the things that they were learning about the job, the workplace, they were also they were transferring those skills into interpersonal relationships. So the second set of quotes, and I won't go through them all, but they really talk about being more patient with their partners or their spouses or with their children, and listening more in interpersonal relationships, just like they would and they've learned and strive to do in a professional setting. And then this third thing, which was, like, amazing to me, and this is also one of the reasons. So I would say, I should have said this earlier, I've totally drank the Kool-Aid for Strive and the Center for Herb and Families. And it's in part because I really like the way that they think about jobs and careers and life. And so one of the things, they have lots of acronyms, and one of two of them, and the title of this presentation is RICH, Realizing It Can Happen. And you don't want to be, so you want to be rich, not poor, which is passing over opportunities repeatedly. So if you think about, normally when you think poor, it's like a money thing or an income thing or a resource thing. But for Strive, for the Strive family, it's like, well, if you pass over opportunities repeatedly, then you're making yourself poor. You're putting yourself in the position to not excel. So, you know, Rich, this first quote, rich is realizing it can happen. That's how people become rich, because they realize it can happen instead of sitting back. I learned poor, passing over opportunities repeatedly. That's why people are poor, because they don't get up and do what they say they're going to do. Now, many of these, you know, and more quotes are like job, just over broke. It's true. It's true. Like, not a lot of money. And so they talk about, you know, this idea and their interaction or their understanding of money and careers, and this idea that even if you have a background or a criminal background, or if you've been hurt or not really excelled in other areas, even if it's in school, you have these opportunities now that you're a Strive, because again, you want to be rich, not poor, both like financially, but also in mind and thought. So what's the conclusion?
Right. So I guess we can say that, you know, the job training program offers much more than just how to get a job and keep a job, right? There's the interpersonal communication skills, you know, really help folks to recognize and steer clear of some of the negative patterns and aspects of their community. You know, sometimes when people have a hard time leaving our center because when they go home, they're going back to the same environment they're trying to leave and trying to get away from. So it can be very overwhelming for some. Another takeaway is that, you know, these programs help to, again, the interpersonal skills and helping people with their conflict resolution, right? We've seen a lot of instant gratification or a need for instant gratification, but, you know, trying to show people that time and determination can kind of change the outcomes. And then also trying to get people linked up to education opportunities, right? Education and further training to strengthen their family. So lots of good stuff from the employment training.
But the one quote that I thought was like the best quote to really reveal this was this last one. And this is a male participant talking about Strive. It's like a shoulder to lean on, a helping hand, because I always know Strive is going to be here. There's help here. There's smart people here. Strive can save lives. It really can. We're in the heart of West Baltimore, nothing but drug traffic and violence right down the street. You come in Strive and you just feel like you have no worries. You feel like I can accomplish something just stepping in. And I mean, I don't know about you. I've never heard that about a job training program. Usually it's like you go and you get a job. But to think that these young people are saying this can change people's lives. And so I would just encourage us and just thinking about some of the next steps. Like how can we build on not just job training programs, but other programs that already exist, whether it's like home visiting programs, to help people change their lives. So we're still in the process of like analyzing data. IRB made us de-identify all the data before we give it over back to CIA, Center for Urban Families. We're going to have a final report. Of course, manuscripts will come at it, but, and Chris was mentioning this earlier, well, he talked about it a bit, this idea that this might expand their opportunity, their organization's opportunities for funding, because they have fatherhood and they have this job training program. But given these structured activities, how might they go to funders and say, like, wait a minute, like, yes, this is our primary purpose, but here's what we're also doing. And so it's been a pleasure to, like, partner with this organization and see where we might go in the future.
Thank you.
So that's that.